Hello and welcome to Podcast by the Peer, the podcast where freelance copywriters talk about all things freelancing and copywriting. Whether you're a seasoned copywriter or just dipping your toe into the world of words, pull up a deck chair and join us as we dive into the minds of some of our freelance favourites. I'm your host, Tom Davis, a freelance copywriter based in Brighton, and today I'm joined by the Maroon Midlander, the mentor to many, the torturer behind copywriters on the rack. It's the legend himself, Jonathan Wilcock. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank to me, not to you, because you were already there. Good morning. Sorry, I'm just giggling because that intro was really funny.
That's not bad for my first go, is it? Before we get going, can I just say thank you, man, for agreeing to be my first ever guest on Podcast by the Peer. What have you let yourself in for?
It's not me and you and me that I'm worried about. It's the people listening, poor son.
Now, this is your first time on a podcast, and this is certainly my first time ever hosting a podcast. So I thought we'd be kind to ourselves with an easy topic to discuss, which is how to survive as a freelance copywriter. But before we dive in the deep end, can you tell our listeners, Jonathan, who you are and how you became a freelance copywriter?
Okay, well, my name is Jonathan Wilcock, and I've been around the block a bit. I started off back in the 80s as an advertising copywriter and also art director in London advertising agencies. Did that for donkey's years and eventually found myself as a creative director in an agency that I wasn't enjoying. So that came to an end. Well, we made it come to an end because me and my then business partner, we jumped ship, started our own agency, and we'd ran that for about 14 years. And that came to a very timely end because it was getting really, really stressful. And I went freelance, and I've been freelance several times before over the years. I went freelance 6 years ago, and I think this is where I'm going to stay. I'm really, really enjoying it. So that's my kind of whistle-stop tour.
Well, lovely. Yeah, I think it's fair to say you've got a lot of experience in your pencil case. I mean that in the cleanest way possible. How has that helped you have an experience both agency side and even running an agency and then what you're doing now as a freelancer?
I think that probably the most obvious benefit has been being in the position of having to hire freelancers. I know what I was looking for, and I know when people have let me down and what I don't want, and that's what I don't want to be, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
You know, over the years, I must have hired, I don't know, a good few dozen freelancers, and some of them a complete pain in the arse, don't do as they promise, don't turn up on time, talk too much, take forever getting to grips, never make you a cup of tea. Well, of course, we all work in the virtual world now, so I'm not making that many cups of tea for people, but yeah, I found out what it is to be a good freelancer from the other side of the fence. So that's been really useful. And I think just generally having lots of experience, because there are a lot of very young copywriters who've come in and they're finding their feet. I found my feet many years ago. I know the craft. I understand what works and what doesn't work. So yeah, if you need somebody seasoned, then somebody with the kind of experience I've got is probably a huge benefit.
Yeah, brilliant. And hopefully we'll get some of those secrets to success out of you today. Well, today's topic, actually, it seems as good a time as any to discuss. And from a few posts I've seen shared by freelance copywriters on social media, it feels like they're feeling the pinch of a bit of a dry spell on the leads front at the moment. And that's to be expected as a freelancer. But in times, you know, when the inbox, it doesn't ping and the phone doesn't ring, what can freelance copywriters do to find more work?
Well, I'm not going to tell you anything that nobody else will tell you, but I can tell you pretty much what I've done. I've written posts about this before. I think the two main things probably are somehow or other maintain self-belief. Don't get into a panic. Don't start to question, am I good enough for this? Because, again, kind of quoting myself in a post, that you're good enough to have got this far. If you've had people paying for your skills in the past, they must be doing it for a reason. So I think that's really important to stay on top of, is not let that kind of creeping self-doubt overtake. The next thing I think is just be prepared to work really hard, which I've done. I'm coming from a space, years and years and years of experience, and we all have dry periods. When I've had a couple of dry periods in the last few years, one of them this year, actually. So my idea of working really hard is actually doing, if your portfolio isn't up to scratch, if you believe that, even if it's just for your own self, just to amuse yourself, just to actually give yourself new things to talk about, is actually just do spec work. Come up with briefs for stuff that you want to work on that you can then show off and do it. Yeah, because obviously all of our work is compromised, but do stuff without compromise. If you were given free rein, what could you do and what could you show off to the world? That's always good stuff to have up your sleeve. Obviously, hit up all of your old contacts. Not only hit them up, ask them up if they know anybody. My last real dry patch, which was probably 2 months ago, this was inspired by a young copywriter, something I've never done before. I thought, right, I'm going to start cold emailing people. I've never, ever done it all my career. Yeah, that was really involved process, finding the agency, finding the creative director, getting their email address, writing an email that you think people are actually going to bother to open. It's a lot of work. So be prepared to graft at it, but, you know, celebrate that and go out and have a cup of tea and chill out as well. Work really hard, and whatever your idea of playing hard is, do that as well. If you can't afford to, then you're not going to be having lunch at the Ritz every day, but why not go to your local cafe on a Friday afternoon and think, sod it, I've had enough. So it's that kind of keeping a balanced mind. Be prepared to work really hard, but not so hard that you drive yourself bonkers and you actually get really uptight about it. So work hard and chill.
Yeah, that's brilliant advice.
In a nutcase, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you're saying there about working hard, I think that's an important point to highlight, because it is hard graft. And I feel that some can get misled by these glossy carousels they see on LinkedIn, how to make a squillion quid in these 6 easy steps as a freelancer. And well, from my experience, that just certainly isn't true. So anyone new to the game that's listening, be prepared to pull your sleeves up and get on with it.
I think you're dead right there, Tom, because in fact, I was in a copywriter's round table thing yesterday, and partway through the conversation, so yeah, we were talking about whatever we were talking about, and it just sort of really dawned on me, there are a load more copywriters now than when I first started out. This content machine that Net didn't used to exist, it's just been filled by lots and lots of, probably a lot of them very young, a lot of them very inexperienced, and to be fair, a lot of them absolutely not that good at what they do. So there's a lot of people out there who think, oh, brilliant, I'll be a copywriter. I write some stuff and I make loads of money. It really isn't like that. Might be for a few, but it's like you. It's not been like that for me. I've had to work bloody hard at it.
No, not at all, mate. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in your blog post that you shared last month, I believe, it's brilliant. It's called How to Survive as a Freelance Copywriter, Lessons Learned the Hard Way. And I'll link to that in the show notes. But you mentioned when you came back to freelancing in 2002 that at that stage, LinkedIn, it was still in nappies. Social media, it wasn't really even a thing then. So how have you had to kind of adapt your game to the changing landscape of freelance copywriting?
Personally, I found it really easy. I think one of the things that, as much as I really enjoyed running an agency, one thing that I didn't enjoy, or one of the many things that I didn't enjoy, was the fact that I was working for the agency and being the voice of the agency, not being the voice of me. So social media has actually been really liberating. If I've got a crap joke that nobody finds funny, except for me, who's going to stop me? I'll stick it on Twitter anyway. Whereas before, it would have gone through our little committee, you know, my business partner and I. Oh, no, that's a bit of a Jonathanism, isn't it? We can't say that. And fair enough, it was right at the time. But now, you know, I've not had to adapt that much. I've just allowed myself to let my hair down and just be me more. So I think with social media, don't take it too seriously. If you don't get that many likes, you don't get that many likes. But it's amazing how many people, even though you don't even realize they're following you, or they're certainly not commenting, but yeah, work comes through that. And yeah, it's a free bit of headline news for you. Get out there and just point people to your blog, have fun with it. It's great.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. I see it as a bit of a a testing platform for some of my ideas as well. And some posts I write that might take a few minutes, quite often they seem to do better than the ones that I've been sweating over for 48 hours. And I'm like, why is no one liking this, the bastards? But I find it fascinating what does resonate and what doesn't. And that's really useful information as a freelance copywriter.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so we've talked about how you can get more work, but it's not just about attracting leads. It's also about qualifying those new leads. And when a lead surfaces in our inbox, it's exciting. We think, brilliant, our marketing efforts, they're finally being recognized. Someone's noticing me. But before one sets off the party cannons, not every lead is the right lead. And saying yes to the wrong project can really damage not just your business as a freelance copywriter, but the business you've been contracted by. So what's your advice to perhaps newer freelance copywriters who might be more at risk of saying yes to the first wrong project that lands on their lap?
I mean, the thing is, even when I've been doing it a good few years now, I still fall into that trap. It's very easy, just get a bit excited. Oh, we've got this great website that needs writing. We'd love to work with you. So fantastic, especially if you're quiet. But I think as a newbie or a relative newbie, I think it's okay to take on stuff that actually it might not be exactly right for you. Yeah, and learn from mistakes rather than avoiding everything. Say yes to stuff. And I think it's important to say yes to stuff that stretches you. I've done several jobs where I think, well, I'll never do that again, but I learned a hell of a lot from it. One thing to get to grips with early on is, do they really have any budget? Do they have any budget? And are you speaking to the person that's actually really responsible for this job? Or is it just an overenthusiastic junior? Because if they've got no budget, I mean, it's your shout at the end of the day. But as most freelancers will tell you, don't work for free. Don't even do pitch stuff for free. Don't get on the pitch list. It's a numbers game and you're going to lose quite often. And it's often very political. They've already got somebody they work with anyway. So if you can establish that they've got budget, that, actually have a conversation with them and find out just if you like the person, you usually get an idea of what they're going to be like just from having a conversation, whether it's a Zoom or a coffee or whatever it might be. If you like them and you feel that, actually, I could work with this person, I'd go for it. But I think you should get choosier as you go along. I've been rejecting work recently that I wouldn't have rejected 5 years ago. But yeah, if you want to establish yourself, you've got to make a few mistakes. You've got to get loads of experience. And if the only thing that you get out of it is like, I know exactly the kind of person I don't want to work with anymore, it's been valuable.
I know you mentioned in the blog post I mentioned earlier that, well, your rule is, if my inner voice is screaming no, I say no, unless my starving family are screaming louder.
Yeah, you're out. It comes down to practicality at the end of the day. Yeah. Follow your gut, but if your gut's hungry, you're going to fool with something.
That's it, man.
Here's a good one for you. And something I only learned a few years ago, and it really does sort the wheat from the chaff. That's for a 50% deposit.
Oh, yeah.
Get a 50% deposit. But the ones that, don't want to, I mean, sometimes there's a valid reason because they have, it's a large organization and their system doesn't allow for it. Okay, fair enough. But people that generally think, well, I'm not giving you a penny until I see the work, they're probably the ones that you'll be chasing in 6 months for final payment anyway.
Yeah.
So if things do go a bit crappy halfway through, at least you've got half the money.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, I do the same. I charge 50% up front as a deposit. The outstanding balance, do you send an invoice for that after you've submitted the first draft or once the project's been signed off?
The latter. Yeah, I'll wait for sign off. Probably not the sensible thing to do, to be honest. Yeah, the caveat here is whatever advice I give today, it might be absolute rubbish, so make up your own mind. But literally, I put in my balance invoice yesterday for a project I started 11 months ago. So maybe that wasn't a wise move. Mm. Doesn't happen often, but occasionally it's like, maybe I, because when I sent the invoice, I said, this should have been in my bank account 9 months ago. So please pay it quickly.
Yeah. It's a bit of a juggling act, isn't it? Because if you send your invoice with the first draft, you can give that impression it's all about the money somewhat. Yeah, I say that quite delicately. If you're sending that balance invoice once you've got towards the end of the project where you are 11 months later, you can be waiting a long time for these amends and you've got bills coming. They're not going to wait. So I guess you just got to do what works for you, really.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with my wait till it's signed off, but I think it's sensible to follow up. You know, you've not heard anything for 2 weeks. And just be honest, yeah, I need to be able to build this because, yeah, cash flow is everything for this. I'm a one-man band, small business. Mm. Most 99% of people are, yeah, they're human and they understand. Yeah. So, but like you say, I think most of us fall into this trap. We do writing because we're gentle little creative creatures who like words. But at some point or other, you're going to have to balance that with paying the bills. So, yeah, it's an interesting balancing act because I'm not a hard-nosed businessman at all. But that 50% thing, yeah, you've got to do that, definitely.
Oh, yeah, without a shadow. Jonathan, man, we've got to mention your website, sowhatif.co.uk. I love the whole website, but what's brilliant about it for me is your portfolio. And it reeks of experience and just demonstrates the prospects, you know what you're doing. But for those that are new to the game, who haven't perhaps had the chance to prove their worth up to this point, how can they show potential clients that they're a right fit for a project?
So I know there are people out there that aren't particularly, haven't got massive amounts of experience. They write a fantastic website and don't show any work. Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, not something I would do, but you know, if you believe the quality and the writing of the website itself and it's persuasive, then you've got that option. But if you go back to my website just a couple of years ago, I was still coming out of that period where I needed to update. A little bit of a backstory. So I've been running this agency for 14 years, sold it to another agency and got made redundant, which was fantastic. Basically, they took on all of the staff. And I was the first casualty, which was great. You know, at the time it was, you know, a wake-up call, but it was exactly what needed to happen. I needed a clean start. But they basically slapped an NDA on all of the work because they bought it. They bought the agency, they bought the name, they bought the clients. So they owned it. So they didn't want me to show it to anybody, which it's difficult because then I've got a portfolio of work that's more than 14, 15 years old, which stuff dates, the language dates, the, you know, you've got stuff on there that's, you know, come and see our new, great new opening in 2003. It's like, oh God, this guy's not done any work for years. So I did a ton of made up work. So that's what you could do as a newbie, set yourself some projects and get hold of a seat, you know. By the way, please don't call me because I'm probably a bit too busy at the moment, but get hold of a senior empathetic mentor to actually crit that work as well.
Yeah.
If you do stuff that you're really proud of, it doesn't matter whether it ran or not. If it's got a brilliant headline, a brilliant idea, some cracking copy, then stick it on your website. That's what I do. That's what I did, actually.
Yeah, great advice. I think it's in Dave Harlan's newsletter, The Word, as well. What he does occasionally is he will take a piece of existing copy that's rubbish and he will rewrite it three or four different ways to show how it could just have way more impact. And you can do that with anything that comes through your letterbox. If you see a rubbish leaflet and you want to work with that company, rewrite it, just a section of it, and you know, show them and say, you could have done it this way, and that might be your foot in the door.
Yeah, yeah. And even if it's not a case of showing it to the client, stick it on your website anyway. My last version of the website that I had before the one now, it had work on there for, let's think, Habitat, Bosch, G-Shock watches, all sorts of stuff. I was never given that as a project by anybody. I just made it up. And it just helped show off what I am capable of.
Yeah, brilliant idea. Jonathan, I've got one more question for you before we go on to your listener questions. And I was overwhelmed with DMs. You're a very popular copywriter, it seems. So I've selected a few for you. But before we get there, do you work from home? And if so, what processes do you have in place to stay productive and limit distractions?
Yeah, I do work from home. Pretty much only work from home. This really isn't going to suit everybody. But I have a pattern of, if I'm busy, and I don't really have much choice, my brain just switches on, I will start quite easily start at 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 5 o'clock, whatever it might be. And you find by midday, you've already basically done a day's work. And then you can start answering emails and do all the admin stuff. And by 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's time to go down the seafront, have a cup of tea, chill out. I mean, often I end up coming back and working. Just recently, I've been very busy and I've been consistently doing 10, 12, 14 hour days. But that's the thing, when you're doing it for yourself, personally, I absolutely love it. And there's no commute, so there's no wasted time. There's no kind of downtime it's not a drag. I just find early starts, personally, this is not for everybody, my head is really clear. There's no point answering an email at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I can get 5 hours work done. 9 o'clock, if there's a desperate email, I'll check what's on the inbox and send a reply. So that's my way of kind of staying focused, is do the work when nobody else is. I guess my other go-to is to recognize the pattern when things aren't going well and sort of admit it to yourself and either change projects, go and do Wordle, go for a walk, whatever it might be. You'll get this advice from a lot of people. It's just walk away from it. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, what could have taken you 5 hours of banging your head against a brick wall will take you 5 minutes when you get back.
Yeah, totally. You get more inspiration, I don't know, staring at clouds than you do a ceiling or plaster wall ceiling. So
yes,
I'm with you there. And I also work that way around as well. I tend to do the creative in the early hours of the day when my brain is fully charged. And then in the afternoon, I'll then get onto the kind of admin, actually running a business side of things, which requires a whole different part of your brain, doesn't it?
Yeah. And also another thing, which again, you will hear this a lot, is don't really worry too much about the first draft. Let's say I've got 500 words to write. I write 1,500 and most of it possibly is garbage. I don't know. Well, I'll just kind of go with a train of thought. Yeah, write that headline 25 different ways. Then walk away from it. Ideally come back to it tomorrow. But if you know, even a half hour break, you can see the wood from the trees. It's kind of, it becomes really easy when you haven't got a blank page to work with. That helps my productivity no end. Just get some stuff down that's on brief-ish and then make sense of it later.
Jonathan, we've got to move on to listener questions now. The first of which is from web copywriter and content marketer Ben McKinney, who asks, what one thing on our side of the industry, whether it's how we present ourselves or how we deliver work to clients, would you insist on making compulsory?
One thing. Am I allowed more than one? I think politeness goes a really long way because, you know, we all get grumpy clients, but there's no need to bring yourself down to their level. I've probably said this, but there's nothing wrong with being nice. People want to work with decent people, I think. So I think I would make that compulsory. I mean, the biggest client I've got now, I've been working with probably for about 3 years. I got it because their previous copywriter was a complete pain in the backside to work with. So they gave me a chance and I've been working with them ever since. And whoever it was has been assigned to history. Wow. So being nice, I think it's really important. And the other thing is hit those deadlines. And if for whatever reason, which is going to be rare, if you can't hit a deadline, let them know well in advance. I'm really sorry. Yeah, Auntie Flo has died. I've got to go to a funeral next week. I know I promised it to you, but I've got to organize stuff. And again, like I say, people are basically human at the end of the day. They'll understand. But that deadline is really important. So hit your deadlines, be a nice person.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, with the deadlines, if you've got another project waiting, you know, it can be tricky. That might have a ripple effect. Right. The next question is from website copywriter Johnson Spink. He's based in Hove. He asks, if you could pass just one lesson back through time to your younger self to help him grow, what would it be and why?
And the first thing I'd say is, why aren't you listening to me, you idiot? You really don't know it all. I don't think I would listen to any advice I'd give the old me. I was a bit of a lad, you know, and I really thought I knew it all. But if the old me was capable of listening, I'd probably say, work a bit harder. my formative years were in early 80s advertising agencies in London. And there was a culture of, come in when you feel like it, stay as long as you want in the pub. And I just fell into that for several years. And if someone came along and said, do you know what? In fact, somebody did. When I first started my first agency, there was a more senior guy who was an accountant director who's now really senior at Sorties. I mean, really senior. I don't know whether it's chief something officer or whatever. He said to me, Jonathan, don't waste your money in the pub. Go and buy yourself a little flat. Spend every penny you got. And I actually did look at the time. I could have got two bedroom flat in London or the outer reaches of crappy bits of London for 30 grand.
Wow.
And at the time, that was an absolute fortune. Absolute fortune. But I must have spent double that down the pub. So I think the two things, I would have saved a load of money, I would have invested it wisely, but also I'd have got to the point where I'm actually decent at my craft a lot quicker. Take the work, have fun with it, but take the work seriously. I think the world's changed. Well, and the world has changed, but if you want to do well at this, you've got a long way to go from zero to get to wherever you want to get to. Because, there's a lot to understand. There's a lot of craftsmanship to do. So, get on with it, sunshine. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, get on with it.
Get up off the pavement and get back to your desk.
All right, last listener question. This one is from copywriter for food and drink brands, Mel Barfield, who asks you, mango or pineapple?
Well, it's got to be mango, hasn't it?
I'm with you, man. Yeah, got to be mango.
Got to be mango. A really nice, sweet Pakistani honey mango in season.
Cool. That's it.
Yeah. Mind you, if you've got the pineapple, I suppose you could always fry it in a bit of butter and sugar. So, yeah. But no, mango, definitely. Sorry, Mel, if you're a pineapple fan.
Right. So we like to finish the show with a feature. It's called Name That Attraction. And with every guest, we ask them to come up with a name and strapline for a new attraction coming to Brighton Pier. All fictional, of course. Jonathan, your new attraction is a roller coaster for dogs. So what's the name and strapline?
Confession here, anybody who's listening to this. Tom asked me this on email a couple of days ago. I thought, right, I'm not going to do this off the cuff. I'm going to have a little think about this. And this just shows you how childish and toilety human, I am, really. So the first one, I've got a few. The first one, sorry. I'm really sorry, Mum. Don't listen to this. Right, Rover's Return. Here's one he ate earlier. They're just getting more and more childish. The Devil's Lamppost. Smell the Fear. Next one is kind of mixing in metaphors a little bit or mixing my movies, but it's the Turdinator. Right. And, the strap line is going to need a bigger poo bag. But then I really was hoping that Turdinator would take off so we could have Turdinator 2. And sorry, I'm just amusing myself here. The strap line is, so it's Turdinator 2. I'll be cack.
God, man, they're awesome. Look how high you've set the bar. I'm not going to have any more guests on the show.
Well, hopefully you'll have some grown-ups who'll give you some sense. But,
that's amazing. speaking of next guests, we have Emma Cowley on the show next. So would you like to set the new attraction task for Emma?
Oh, Emma, the lovely Emma. Absolutely. So how about this? It's the world's worst mime artist.
Okay.
The old end of the pier kind of variety show is the world's absolute worst mime artist.
Okay. There you go. A name and strapline.
If she doesn't crack it, I know I will.
There you go, Emma. Your homework is set. Brilliant. Jonathan, if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
They can find me. My website's the best place, I reckon. It's sowhatif.co.uk. And if you want to find me on LinkedIn and Twitter, there's links on there. Don't bother coming to find me if you don't like toilet humour, basically. If you don't like the idea of the Turdinator, then what can I say?
That's brilliant. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining, mate. And if you found this episode useful, do consider leaving a review for the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want to join me for a chit chat, do drop a line at coastalcopy.co.uk. And I'll see you next time on Podcast by the Peer. This episode of Podcast by the Peer is sponsored by Tate Surveying Services based in Brighton. Tate Surveying have spent most of their marketing budget on this 30-second ad, so I don't want to waste it by telling you things you already know. Like, for example, how important it is to arrange a home buyer survey before you buy a property. I mean, imagine buying a property without having a home buyer survey. You'd have to be the kind of cheapskate who uses ChatGPT instead of a proper copywriter. And I know that's not you. If you're thinking about buying a property and want 10% off your home buyer survey, visit tatesurveyingservices.co.uk and use discount code PODCAST with your inquiry. See you next time.